You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Catherine Edwards is a spokesperson for the Canadian Association of Community Television Users and Stations, or CACTUS. CACTUS is an advocacy group for community TV and public access broadcasting. When we spoke with Catherine Edwards earlier this year, the CRTC planned to hold public hearings in April on the state of public access TV in Canadian communities. And Catherine presented to the CRTC at those hearings, and now she joins us again this morning. Hello, Catherine.
Hi.
Now, the Canadian Broadcasting Act currently requires cable companies to set aside around $100 million for public access TV. How does that money currently find its way into community access TV programming?
Well, just to clarify, the Canadian Broadcasting Act doesn't say anything specifically about cable companies and community TV. All it says is that there are three elements in the Canadian broadcasting system: public, private, and community. And most people understand that as to mean ownership. So the public system is owned by the public, the private system is owned by the private sector, and the community sector should be owned by the community sector. But we've got this odd situation in Canada that since the system was implemented in the early 1970s, cable companies have offered a public access channel to the public, and technically speaking, the cable company owns it. So although I'd say for the first 30 years of this system, up until about 1997, they were fairly honorable about executing that mandate, in that, you know, the public, almost anyone could walk in the doors of a cable company and say they wanted to make a program or they wanted to have training, and it was an opportunity for them to express themselves. It was supposed to be the Canadians that own the broadcasting system. It's supposed to be their window into directly, you know, expressing themselves using that system. But unfortunately, what happened in 1997, it was two times ago that the community television policy in Canada was reviewed. It was partly deregulated. The channels became optional for cable companies. And if they elected to continue to have them, they were supposed to spend 2% of their gross revenues on it. And that comes to quite a lot. So 2% is like on a $50 cable bill, is a dollar on every cable bill. Cable subscribers are paying to have the right to access a TV channel to get their messages out or to get training. And that came to over $130 million. If you add that all up across the country, it was $130 million last year. So quite a lot of money. So it's CRTC policies and regulations that stipulate the cable companies are supposed to do that. But that's an interpretation of the Broadcasting Act by the CRTC. So what's been happening since 1997 is we've seen, as cable companies have found themselves in a competitive market for the first time, you know, facing satellite and competition from telephone companies as well, they've wanted to use those channels as a professional competitive advantage. I mean, this is us reading between the lines, but what they've done is they've, for the most part, gotten rid of volunteer-produced programming, though they still do use volunteers. Some of the companies use volunteers in technical roles. It's free labor. But they've tended to professionalize the channels. So, for example, if you look at most of the Shaw programming there in Vancouver, most of it is staff-produced, except for a few groups in the community that continue to persist producing, but usually not with Shaw equipment. They're doing it in their own facilities now because all the Vancouver neighborhood offices that used to exist, there used to be 12, have been shut, and there's just, you know, one production facility in Shaw's corporate office downtown. So this has happened across the country. We've seen closures of the actual facilities. So, for example, New Brunswick used to have over 30 studios. Now there's only 6, and also professionalization of the production. So in the few channels that actually remain, where one, in theory, should be able to go, use a studio, in fact, staff are producing most of the shows.
Now, when you went to the CRTC, you proposed an alternative to that. What are sort of in big strokes your vision was for community TV?
Well, our vision is to bring Canadian community television policy in line with the rest of the world, really. It's ironic because Canada was the first country that officially endorsed this idea, you know, that television should be open for public use. There had been community radio channels around the world, you know, since the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. But we were the first in television. And then following us throughout the 1980s and 1990s, you know, most other Western countries, there's about 30 altogether, have followed suit and now have formal policies, you know, government policies and often federal funding support as well for the public to run their own channels. But they're really owned by the public. You know, these have community boards of directors. They're nonprofit organizations. And they're running these channels. So we're now saying it's time for us to catch up, that, you know, cable is in a different business environment now. They've consolidated their operations. You know, they just don't have offices in many of the small towns where they used to have them. So what we're saying is that nonprofit boards of directors should be able to apply to a fund. We're saying that $130 million that cable companies are spending themselves on their own programming, what's become branded cable programming, should be made available to communities to step forward and run these licenses for themselves. That's the big picture.
And now I understand that there's something there that involves multimedia access, or multimedia access center. What's that about?
Yeah, well, I mean, as you know, television is still very important. Every broadcaster will tell you that, but it's not the only medium around today. And as the point of the community television policy when it was first written was sort of to give Canadians access to the latest and greatest sort of media literacy training in the technology of the day at that time, we feel it should be modernized. So while we envision these community-run channels having over-the-air television licenses, and they may also want to collaborate with local community radio channels and out of the same facility, that'll sort of be up to community by community to do that, to figure that out. But we're suggesting that they should teach and give access to new media tools as well. So not only could you go down, use a camera, shoot a program in the studio, but it might be distributed over the air on cable and streamed to the web as well. Or you might want to come and take a course in, you know, you might be a small nonprofit and you might want to take a course in website design, you know, and shoot a small video about your organization and, you know, have someone be able to help you, tell you how to integrate that on your website. So we see it not just as dealing with the current problem with Canada's community television policy, but also as an important part of Canada's digital strategy, which is being developed as we speak, that this would be a way to roll out across the country multimedia training centers so that the community can keep up and have access to new tools as they become available. And that $130 million is a lot of money. It's we've calculated it's enough to fund about 250 such multimedia, multi-platform production centers. Just to give you an idea, you know, when we sat down to figure out how this would all work, we you know, went to the StatsCan site. There's only 170 communities in all of Canada that have more than 10,000 people. You know, we're a pretty small country. So that amount of money, those 250 centers, it's enough for every community over 10,000 people. It's enough for additional neighborhood offices in big cities, like the way Vancouver used to have multiple offices. So you wouldn't, everyone doesn't have to drive downtown, you know, from Burnaby. And also, there's space in there for about 50 regional centers to serve more rural areas. You know, you might end up having a camera and an edit suite or free internet portals in a community center in a small community, but maybe they would pool their programming to actually play back from a regional center, something like that. So it's enough money to make a significant difference in terms of the local programming people have access to, as well as in skills training in new media.
Well, it sounds like you brought some pretty imaginative stuff to the table when you went before the CRTC. What about the industry? What did they have to present as alternatives for community access?
The cable companies themselves were asking really to go more away from the community access than they're already doing. So they asked that the currently under the regulations, they're allowed to have, or they're supposed to have a minimum of 30% of the content on their channels is supposed to be produced by communities. They were asking that those minimum be taken away altogether. Currently, they're not allowed to do, they're only allowed to do a certain restricted forms of advertising. Some of the cable companies were asking for those restrictions to be taken away. They're asking for more freedom to regionalize production than they already have. In other words, share programming among systems, which is already rampant. So from the cable industry, we didn't see anything innovative in terms of serving communities. It was more to help them develop their brands, frankly. But the rest of the industry that intervened, including the private and public broadcasters, And industry associations like ACTRA, the Actors Union, CEP, the Canadian Energy and Paper Workers Union, the Canadian Media Guild, which is the union for the CBC, every other industry group that intervened supported CACUS's proposal and recognized that there's problems with the current system and that, you know, somehow some of that money needs to be liberated so that communities can apply it the way they see fit.
Now, this may be a fairly big question, but the television signals are slated to be digital by 2011.
What
does that present an opportunity or a threat to community television?
It presents a huge opportunity. So on the one hand, the government at the moment, you know, it's not final, is saying that broadcasters in, well, they call them markets, but let's call them communities so that we're talking about real people, not just consumers. They're saying that people living in towns or cities under 300,000, broadcasters won't be required to convert to digital. And it's kind of up in the air whether that means those broadcasters will simply continue to broadcast in analog, which they're allowed to do, or whether they might just shut them down and people in those communities lose their access to free over-the-air television and they're forced to subscribe either to cable or in most rural areas, in fact, it's satellite. So what we're saying is communities, if communities have access to some resources to distribute over the air their own community service, you know, that means you've got to have a transmission tower and you've got to have transmission equipment, then why not, you know, they're in a perfect position to offer rebroadcasting of public and private sector signals. So, and some communities already do it. So right in BC, and not far from you in Valemont and in the Peace River area, there are two community television channels which not only, you know, generate their own local programming with volunteer help in the community, they also rebroadcast about a dozen services from the public and private sectors, like, you know, CBC, Discovery Channel, History Channel, whatever the community as a whole has sort of voted to have. And they do it at a fraction of the price of the private sector. So they're, you know, it costs about $40 a year for people in that community to get that whole package of programming. And the reason that they've done it is historically cable, you know, these communities were so small, cable wasn't interested to go there. And while satellite is now available in some of the communities, you know, it's much more expensive. So we're regarding that as a huge opportunity, and we want to get that message out that people do, there is another option.
Catherine, you mentioned a couple of things. There's a couple of things converging here. So we've just had the CRTC hearings. Canada's developing a digital strategy, and the whole kind of landscape of television and new media is kind of shifting. So where do you think people who are interested in community broadcasting can, where should they be focusing their efforts?
I think what's important is that no matter what the tools are, the media haven't really changed. People need, it's text, it's pictures, it's audio, and it's moving video. I mean, the internet, there's new platforms available for distributing them and also new equipment for producing them. And so, for example, the internet is great about letting you mix these media and making it interactive so people can, you know, download just short little bits of video if they want, when they want it, whereas, you know, television used to be linear. But it's still really about the same basic media, and people need central resources in communities where that they can go and learn to produce those things and combine them how they want and then distribute them. So our feeling is what's important is to have the community level facility in the same way that libraries have been in communities for, you know, over 100 years now in most places, and their services change over time, but the basic idea is the same, that there should be a central information and, you know, content creation resource for people, and then as new media come along, those are incorporated and become part of the choice that you have when you go there.
Well, it's been great talking with you this morning, Catherine. Thanks for joining me.
Well, thanks very much for inviting us. Like I said, it's really important for people to know what their options are as we come up to the switchover next year.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
I've been speaking with Catherine Edwards of CACTUS, the Canadian Association of Community Television Users and Status. Their website is cactus.independentmedia.ca.